sum operator A acting on another vector psi, then this is true. So let me explain a bit better what I meant by this. And let me start by saying once more that Dirac's notation is very nice. It's very compact. But actually, this thing stands for a scalar product. So it might be worth using a different notation for this for a while. Say brackets and inside the two vectors. So this is a scalar product between the vector phi and the vector psi. And written in this way, phi actually represents this mapping from phi psi to the scalar product of phi and psi. This is why bra phi belongs to the dual space. Now, what is the definition of the adjoint operator? Basically, if we take the scalar product of phi and some operator A acting on another state psi, then the complex conjugate of this should be equal to the adjoint of the operator acting on phi, scalar product with psi. This is the definition. So let me see what notation was I using. This is chi. This means that scalar product between phi and chi should be equal. Wait, no, this is not what I want. I want to look at the scalar product between chi and some other state phi. So this is the scalar product between A acting on psi and phi. Now, taking this definition of the adjoint operator, and keeping in mind that the adjoint of the adjoint is the operator itself, this thing can be written as psi A dagger phi star. Or if we switch the order of the two vectors, we just remove the complex conjugate, and this becomes A dagger phi psi. Wait a second, what did I do wrong? Sorry, one second. No, I don't want to do this. So now this thing can be written as psi A dagger. Phi. Wait a second. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm doing a mistake somewhere. Can anyone see it? Yes, sorry, I should. Sorry. This is equal to a dagger phi scalar product with psi, which is then equal to this one. Yes, I should have switched the order here. So this can be thought of now as an operator acting on phi. And in this sense, this is chi bra. Is this clear? Yeah. Questions? Yeah? Okay. So let's move to something else. And I want to talk a little bit about notation and indices. So yesterday I told you that if psi is some vector in your vector space, and you choose some basis for this vector space, EI, and for now, let's suppose that this is a finite dimensional vector space. Let's say this has dimension n, so that I here runs from 1 to n. Then the vector psi can be expanded in this basis, and it will be a sum over I running from 1 to n of psi i's. These are just numbers. They will be complex numbers if this is over the field of complex numbers, times the vectors of the basis. And a nice way to write this is to express this thing as a line vector. And the psi i's as a column vector. In this sense, we associate psi with the column vector psi 1, psi 2, psi n in the basis of EI. Right? Whenever we write any vector as a column vector, it must refer to a specific basis. Now, note that we use raised indices. I is raised here to indicate column vectors. And lowered indices, I here is in the bottom, to indicate line vectors. And this is a convention I'll try to stick to throughout the lecture. Now, another convention, known as the Einstein summation convention, is that whenever you have two repeated indices, and usually it's one raised and one lower index, then you don't need to write the sum. Summation is always assumed. So we can write psi is just psi i ei. And this actually means the sum over i's. Okay. Now let's see what happens in the dual space. Starting from this, we get that the dual vector of psi can be written as the dual vector of the basis vectors times the complex conjugate of these psi i's. Okay? Now, let's do one more thing. Let's define a metric on our space. And I will define a metric Gij as the scalar product between two vectors out of the basis, EI and EJ, or if you want, you can also write it like this. Since I and J take n values each, this thing is an n by n matrix. Furthermore, I want to define the inverse metric and the way I define it is that I define now a matrix with raised indices and I demand that this is the inverse of this matrix. Delta IK is the identity matrix is the identity n by n matrix. This can be written 1, 1, 1. Okay, is there anyone here who hasn't seen relations like this before and thinks this doesn't make any sense? Raise your hands. No? Okay, great. So we can use our metric and inverse metric to raise and lower indices. I can lower the index on psi using Gij. And of course, you can check that this is equivalent to psi j equals Gij psi I. Similarly, I can raise the index in EI using again the inverse metric. So I can write the dual vector as the sum over the basis in the dual vector, now with the raised index, times psi I lowered index star. And in this sense, we usually associate dual vectors with a line vector psi 1 star, psi 2 star, up to psi n star. Again, this thing has a lowered index, so it is a column vector, it is a line vector, whereas EI would be now a column E1, E2, etc. Okay, this is very abstract now, so I'm not sure if I can give a geometric meaning to this very abstract thing, but usually the form, do you have a question or?
Based on both gravitation, the one like the co-vectors will be planes perpendicular. So if you have a direction x, then the plane perpendicular to x is what you think of the covector as, and then the vector, well, then the inner product between a vector and a covector is how many planes a vector penetrates. So if the covector is bigger, then you think of the planes as being denser, so that way the vector penetrates more planes. And if they're orthogonal, then it won't go through any planes because it won't be normal to the surface.
So that would be one thing. I was about to say something different, that usually in, say in general relativity, when we talk about, usually we refer to column vectors as contravariant vectors and these things as covariant vectors. So the idea is that if you have any vector in your space, say a contravariant vector, there is a specific rule for the way that it transforms under general coordinate transformations. So everything with a raised index transforms according to this rule. Everything with a lowered index transforms according to another rule. They are kind of the inverse rules. That would be another interpretation. I don't know if, David, you want to say something more.
So can I just, so I guess the metric lets us define angles between vectors.
Mm-hmm.
So the inverse metric lets us define angles between co-vectors.
He said that the metric let us define angles between vectors, and in the same sense the inverse metric allows us to define angles between covectors.
And the dual space.
I was trying to ask about, like, I need to have an image about the dual space. So the geometric, the dual space.
Yeah, and also the metric and the inverse metric provide a map between the two spaces.
But don't forget that the dual space, formally, it's a space of operators. It's a space of maps. This thing, we write it as a vector, and it is indeed a vector space, but it is a map from the original vector space to, say, the complex numbers or the real numbers. Okay. Let me move to algebras. So let's start from the formal definition of what an algebra is. You start again from a vector space V, let's say defined over some field K. And you also give a law of composition of two vectors in this vector space. And that would be a map from V times V back to the vector space itself. So if U and V are vectors in V, and somewhere around here, I will stop using, at least for a while, Dirac's notation. So no more bras and cats. U and V are vectors. And for now, I denote this law of composition, call it multiplication, by a dot. U dot V also belongs to the same vector space. There are two requirements for this multiplication. One is that if alpha and beta, let's say, are just numbers, they belong to the field. The law of composition should be linear in the second argument. And actually, it should also be linear in the first argument. This is the most general definition of an algebra. Any kind of any law of composition that obeys these two properties, any vector space on which this can be defined is an algebra. The algebra may or may not be commutative, it may or may not be commutative or associative. Oh, sorry. Yeah, this is wrong. So it may or may not be commutative and associative. Okay, as an example of non-commutative and non-associative algebra, take the usual 3D space, Euclidean space. And the exterior product between two vectors. Now, let me write every vector in this space as UIEI, where EI is my usual basis. Then the exterior product is defined in this way. U cross V is equal to U cross V EI with the ith component of U cross V being epsilon I JK UJ VK, where epsilon IJK is the total anti-symmetric tensor in three dimensions. Epsilon 1, 2, 3 is 1. If you exchange any two indices, this becomes minus 1. And whenever you have more than one indices repeated, this is 0. Okay, now. We know that this is non-commutative. But it is also non-associative. And you can check this by taking the difference of U cross V together and then cross W minus U cross V cross W. And the answer to this is U dot V times W minus V dot W times U, where U dot V is the usual scalar product, UI, VI. Now, who will derive this one now? Maybe, yeah. Take 2 or 3 minutes, and then one can derive it on the board. Anyone ready? Do you want to use this blackboard? Just we need to find this U cross V cross W minus U cross V cross W. Thank you.
So I wrote it in the components.
Can you choose if you want?
I J K
And here it is epsilon I L sigma j and epsilon j m k.
Yes.
And augmentary sense epsilon I j k epsilon j l n minus epsilon I L k epsilon j m k.
Yes, you are allowed to do any cyclic permutations of whatever you want. Yeah.
And the remains the same. And here we change this I and J. J, L, I, J, M, K.
Okay.
So it's the same.
So just change your.
And then we use the identity. Epsilon I J K multiplied by epsilon I J prime K prime. This equals to delta J J prime delta J K K prime minus delta J K prime delta J prime K. So we just expand it into deltas. Epsilon I L. Oh no. Delta I L delta K M plus delta I N delta K L plus delta L M delta I K minus delta L K delta I N. And this is U L E N M L K. And this becomes minus U. U I and B dot W and plus V I U dot W plus W I U dot V and minus V I U
Yeah, this is exactly what we want. Cancel. Yeah. Yes, this is what we wanted.
Oh.
These two cancel out. Thank you very much.
Okay. These two.
These two cancel out. Oops. And this is exactly the component that we wanted over there. Thank you very much. So this is the ice component. Thank you. Okay. Where was I? So. Now, let's go back to an abstract finite dimensional algebra A. And let's consider a basis for this algebra. I call the vectors in this basis EI. I will run from 1 to n. Now, by definition, EI times EJ belongs to this algebra. Therefore, there must be a way to expand this in terms of the basis vectors again. And this is where we introduce what are known as the structure constants, CKIJ. They are uniquely defined, and they are very important in any algebra, because basically, once you know what these are, you know everything you need to know about the algebra. And this is the most common way to define an algebra as well. For example, if A is some element in this algebra, and B is another element, then immediately you know the rule for composing A with B. This is AI dot BI EI. And we said before that the product in the algebra is defined to be linear in both arguments. Sorry, I shouldn't have repeated my indices twice. I'll use J here. So this becomes AI BJ EI dot EJ, or AI BJ CK IJ AK. So once you know what the structure constants are, then you are able to find the product between any two vectors belonging to the algebra. For example, again, the algebra of 3D vectors and the exterior product. What are the structure constants for this algebra? We know that E1 cross E2 equals E3. This means that C121 is equal to C122 equal to 0, and C13123 is equal to 1. Because this is an anti-commuting algebra, all the C's will be anti-commuting in those indices too. And similarly, we can find all the other structure constants. Okay. I don't care any longer about the upper board. That's why I have it there. Now, let me define what an algebra homomorphism is. Basically, it is a map from one algebra to another that preserves the multiplication rules. So we have a map from one algebra A to another algebra A prime that preserves our multiplication. Phi of A product B should be the same as phi A product phi B, if A and B belong to the original algebra. An isomorphism is exactly the same thing, but it is also one-to-one and onto. And then we talk about isomorphic algebras. Sorry, say it again.
Do they have to be linear as well?
No, not necessarily. I wouldn't say so, no. I don't think so, no. Maybe I should skip this. Okay, another quick example. Complex numbers, they are a commutative and associative algebra. This is what Tibra told you yesterday. What is the basis for this algebra? It's 1 and I. And what are the defining relations? 1 times 1 equals 1. 1 times I equals I times 1 equals I. And I times I equals minus 1, which may also be written in the following way. The only non-zero structure constants are from this one, C1, 1, 1 is 1. From here we see that C1, 2, 2, and C2, 1, 2 is equal to 1. And this thing is equivalent to saying C2, 2, 1 is equal to minus 1. And now an example of an isomorphism. You can easily check that this algebra is isomorphic to an algebra which is formed out of a basis of 2 by 2 matrices, I and J, which I define to be 0, 1, 1, 0, and 0, 1, minus 1, 0. It's not hard to check that, first of all, I times I equals I, because this is the identity. I times J equals J times I equals J, and J squared equals minus I. these two algebras have exactly the same structure constants. And you can check that if I define this map from the complex numbers to, let's call this thing A, now I can write, I can write any element in this algebra as x plus I times y. So I can define a map from the complex numbers to A as x times I plus y times j, or in other words, x, y, minus y, x. Now, one thing that I can leave as an exercise here. Is that this mapping actually preserves multiplication. In other words, what I would like you to do is to use the multiplication law that defines the algebra, the complex numbers algebra, and find what x plus iy times u plus iv equals to. And then check that phi of x plus iy times phi of u plus iv actually equals to phi of x plus iy times u plus iv. Okay, let's take 5 or 10 minutes break. So, no, first of all, do you have any questions right now? Sure.
Should the algebra always be defined on a vector space?
It can also be defined on a group, so but so apparently yes. Then we